We go to the next one. Tasmat pranamya pranidhaya kayam. Prasadaye tvam ahamishamidyam. Piteva putrasya sakheva sakyuhu. Kriya kriyayar hasi deva sodhum. He said, Tasmat, therefore, since you are the Lord of the universe, you are the greatest guru, there is no one equal to you, you are the greatest, you are the most powerful. And when that happens, what can the student do except bow down? He says, Tasmat pranamya, therefore I bow down. Pranidhaya kayam, with my body, you know, sashtang pranam, you know, like my whole body is on the floor. My kaya, my body is down, prostrate to you. Prasadaye, O Lord, forgive me, be kind to me, be merciful to me. Tvam, you, O Lord, to me, aham, and who are you? Isham idiam, you are the most beloved, you are the most dear, you are the most, the one I love the most. So you are the most beloved, the best, Lord. So please forgive me. Why should I forgive you? He says, because just as pita eva putrasya, just as how does a father forgive a child, or a sakha sakhihu, or a how a friend forgives another friend, or priyav priyayar, or how a beloved forgives her beloved, arhasi, you should deva sodhum, you should have mercy on me and give up all this and forgive me. Forgive all the things I have done, all the wrong things I have said and all the wrong things I have done in my life, because you are the beloved. So here the first thing is, what is prostration? You know, he says, I bow down. And that's even Swami Shantanandaji recently, he made a very clear point. See, every time somebody comes, something, you know, you get a lot of points. But one of them that I got, that when you go in front of the Lord, don't just do namaste like that. Bow down, you know, get down on your knees and put your head down. Then only your surrender is complete. And why do we need to surrender? You know, they say, why? Who God is what? You know, is he a politician that he wants us to praise him and he wants us to bow down to him? It's not the God doesn't need us to do that. Whether you bow down or don't, or whether you walk by and criticize him, or whether you praise him, or whether you love him or don't, he is not affected, because he is way above that. Just as in my dream, if somebody praised me or somebody criticized me or somebody called me a great or somebody called me an idiot, it has no reality, because in the waking state, everything in my dream is false. So this world is false, and there is one reality, which is God. But why do I have to bow down? Like, why do we bow down to our guru, to our teacher? They say you bow down to the teacher not because to fatten his ego or because he feels good, but we bow down to the feet of the guru because the guru stands on his knowledge. The guru has higher knowledge and he stands on his knowledge. So the feet represent the knowledge. So when I bow down or when I touch the teacher's feet, I am prostrating to the knowledge, not to that individual, not to that body, not to that human, but to the knowledge that he or she represents. So similarly, when I bow down to the Lord or prostrate to him, I am surrendering my ego. Because what keeps me from the Lord and from everybody else is this ego, this perceiver, feeler and thinker, this individuality, Anil or Kerry or Pankaj or whatever I have, my individuality, and I think of that as being real, and so that's why I am separate from others and I love somebody and I hate somebody, and this one belongs to my religion and this one belongs to my church and this one belongs to my city or my country. In India we even say he belongs to my state. So if one who is from my state, I love him, and another state is not that important. So we have all these distinctions. So when you surrender and give up your ego, then you become one with the Lord and you become humble. And without humility and without surrender, spiritual progress is not possible. So that's why he says, I bow down with my body on the ground, because, O Lord, you are the most powerful. Prasadaye, and be merciful to me. Be, you know, be forgiving. Be kind to me, O my beloved Lord. Swamiji in his commentary says that to the Lord of the universe, I can offer nothing. You know, what can I give him? You know, even it says, you know, like if when you go to give a birthday gift to somebody and he's a multimillionaire and has everything, you know, he's so rich, everything he has, nothing. What can you take to him? You can't, because he has everything. So the Lord of the universe, he has everything, and everything I have is given by him. The body, the mind, the intellect, my ability to work, think. So what can I offer him? He has given me so much. Like if somebody gives you a gift, you say, I must return the gift. You know, at least I must give him something. You know, he has all the time given me so many gifts. Now it's his birthday. Let me think of something I can give him. So Swamiji says, you have nothing to give him except your horrible vasanas, your bad tendencies, your horrible vasanas, the smell of these vasanas. Vasana actually means perfume, but vasanas are the negative tendencies, and that's all I can offer you, O Lord. That's all I have. You know, everything else you have given me. The body you have given, the mind you have given, the intellect you have given. The vasanas I created. I created this anger and greed and jealousy and hatred. And so only thing I created was this vasanas. And because of the vasanas, I created all the problems in the world. Because I have jealousy and I have greed, so I want to take from others. Then I hate somebody and I love somebody. And so he says, just all you can offer is this bundle of filthy, smelly vasanas. And you say, Lord, that's all I have, and that's all I offer them to you. You please accept them and give me everything in this universe. You know, what kind of a trade is that? You say, I'm giving you that and you give me everything. But that is what, if you listen to the story of Sudama, we have all heard the story of Sudama. But there is a great symbolism in that. Because Sudama took, everybody knows, I won't repeat the story. He took a bundle of puffed rice, cooked rice, because his wife told him, you know, you are going to Krishna, who is the king and who is so powerful, and they were so poor. She said, I don't have anything, but I have this rice. So she cooked the rice and said, take it for Krishna and offer it as a gift to him. You know, when you go to somebody's house, you're supposed to take it. So Sudama was carrying that potli, that little packet in his hand. And then when he approaches Krishna and he's shown into the palace, he says, oh my God, Krishna is the king and he's the so powerful and he owns the whole Mathura. And how can I offer him this little bundle of rice? And he's very ashamed. And then Krishna says, what are you hiding? Show me that. And Krishna grabs it and he starts eating the rice. He says, you know, the Bhabiji, your wife sent it and you are hiding it from me. And Krishna starts eating the rice. And in return, as we know the story, when Sudama goes home, he has all the money and the house and the palace and he has everything. So the symbolism of the puffed rice or the cooked rice, Swami Chidanmayananda, somewhere he had written, I had heard that. He says the cooked rice represents our vasanas. Now our vasanas at this moment are uncooked. They are raw. They are functioning. You know, because, say, the rice or a seed that is not cooked, right? A seed is there. You put a seed in the ground, it will sprout flowers. It will sprout a tree. But say if the seed is roasted, it is cooked, roasted. A roasted seed you put in the ground, even you leave it for 100 years and put water and fertilizer, it will not grow. Why? Because the seed is roasted. The seed is cooked. So our vasanas at this moment are uncooked. They are raw, and that's why they create all the negative thoughts, negative desires, negative actions. So all my negativity is created by my negative vasanas, which are active, which are working constantly. I have these desires, I have these tendencies. That's what makes an alcoholic drink, and that's what makes a businessman cheat, and that's what makes a robber rob. So it is these vasanas. So when they say that the vasanas should be roasted, like the roasted seed, it means is that the vasanas should be ended. They should become where they are incapable of creating more desires. Which means I should be able to overcome these vasanas and basically destroy them, or basically make them impotent, incapable of creating. And those I can offer to the Lord. They say, oh Lord, I have overcome all my selfish desires, my vasanas. I have slowly, through the grace of the Lord, the grace of the teachers, reduced my worldly desires and made my desires for the Lord. So automatically the vasanas get reduced. And whatever little are left, they are called roasted, where they are incapable of producing seed, producing a fruit. So just as Sudama offered that cooked rice, so you offer your vasanas to the Lord, which are cooked, which are roasted, and then the Lord will accept them cheerfully, just as Krishna enjoyed eating that rice. So the Lord says, okay, I accept your vasanas, and in return, I give you me. I give you me, that means I give you the whole universe, just as Sudama, that story. So there is a great symbolism in that. So that's what they say, oh Lord, I offer you what everything I have that is yours, and my sole desire is to reach you, possess you. All my other desires slowly, slowly get less. And then he says, forgive me. How? Pita eva putrasya. Just as a father forgives a child, you know, like there may be a child, they say, like, you know, house, there is a father and he has two boys, the older one. The older one is usually the one who listens, you know, and he listens to the parents, and, you know, and the younger one is the mischievous one. So anyway, in this home, there is these two boys, and the older one is very respectful, and the younger one creates all the problems. So he tells the father, I'm tired of you bossing me and my older brother bossing me. You know, this property you have, it's ancestral property. It came from your father, grandfather, great-grand. I want it divided. You know, it's right now it's not a good time. No, I want my share of the property. So whatever land we have, the farming, I want it divided in half, the buildings in half, the wealth in half. I want my share, and then I'm through with you and I'm through with my brother. You can give the other half to the brother. Father, in his love, he says, okay, you want it. So he divides the property, hands over the money and the land. And the boy, what does he do? He sells all the property, everything, converts it into cash, goes into some other city or country, and there he finds a wife and gets married, and, you know, obviously the money he has not earned, so he wastes it in all these useless business endeavors, and by the time he has wife and three children, he's a beggar. Why? Because all the money is gone. He has invested it badly, put it in the stock market, didn't know what he was doing, and now suddenly he's poor. What do I do? I have no money. I have no. How can I take care of my wife? I have three children. So then he comes back to the father. Father, I am so sorry. You know, I was so wrong, and I hurt you, and I hurt my brother, and I hurt mother. Father is not going to say, get out of here. You know, you took your money and leave. No, father will still forgive him. He say, okay, aagaya, theek hai. You know, at least you came. The story of the prodigal son in the Bible, it's the same thing. The father will accept him back, no matter what kind of father or the mother. Obviously, it translates into that, does not mean only father. That no matter how bad the child is, but if he comes back with love and, you know, with asking for forgiveness, he will. You know, that's what he says. So you are my father, so please forgive me. No matter what bad things I did, it is your duty to forgive. He says, you don't have a choice. And then he says, Sakhe was sakhe. Similarly, a friend, if there is a good friend, and accidentally you say something or you humiliate him or insult him, and then later on you say, I'm sorry. Say, okay, you know, theek hai yaar, don't do it next time. Or similarly, a beloved, you know, husband maybe do this, that, and the other. But if he comes to the wife and says, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, I hurt you. And this morning I used all this, you know, angry words and I apologize. She will forgive him because she loves him. So he says, just as a father forgives a child or a friend forgives a friend or a beloved forgives a beloved, you should also forgive him. Arhasi. He says, you should. He doesn't give him a choice. He says, that is your job. Because you are the father, you have to forgive me. That again shows the love and the confidence that Arjuna has, you know, in this relationship. And that just brought me briefly that what kind of relationships we should have with Arjuna. I have done that before, but reason I keep pointing it out, because this is very, very important. Just as it is important to have a guru, it is very important to have a relationship of love with the Lord. Relationship with God should not be a fear. You know, at the basic level, it starts with fear. That's why even in the Bible it says, fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You know, I think there is a line in the Bible, something like that. But that is for a basic. You know, because Christ was talking to fishermen and, you know, and people who were not that educated, and they had to be taught. So he, you know, he said, oh, you need to fear God. And for at that level, yes, I'm afraid of God. Oh God, you know, he'll punish me, and that he'll put me in heaven and he'll put me in hell, and I'll go through the dunk, he'll put me in hot oil, and all those descriptions are there. You know, how many my flesh will be eaten, all those, you know, things are there. But that can only carry you so far. Fear can only carry you so far. The real knowledge is that God is all loving. He's the compassionate, kind, merciful, loves me, is ready to forgive me. Then in that case, then people will start doing bad things. You know, if they don't have fear of God, you know, right now at least Bhagawan ka to dar hai, you know, that's why at least maybe they are not doing bad things, you know, otherwise they would start doing bad things. So Vedanta says, you don't need to fear God, you need to fear your karmas, your actions. Because ultimately, whatever is happening to you is not God who is sitting there doing it, or not my boss or my father or my husband or my, you know, neighbor or my child. It is my own karmas. So you have to fear karmas. So constantly be alert and make sure that we are not doing bad karmas. You know, physically you are not saying doing anything bad. With the speech, you are not hurting somebody with your speech. Even mental karmas. There is a Muniji who comes here and he says, be very watchful about your thoughts, because even you have negative thoughts about somebody, that, oh, this person is horrible, or this, you are creating a negative karmas. So the negative karmas will give you negative result. So what you have to fear is your karmas. Fear does not mean that you walk through life afraid, but that be very watchful, that I am not doing negative things to hurt others, and vice versa, do positive things, try to accumulate. I think of it like a bank. There is this karmic bank, and you can keep on adding good karmas, good karmas, good karmas, and then your bank balance will increase. But if you start doing bad karmas, then you are depleting that account, you know, that account that you have accumulated. And ultimately, not only it will become zero, it will become negative, because you have borrowed against that. So all your good karmas you will dissolve and accumulate so many, and that's why people who do all these horrible deeds, you know, molesting children and, you know, raping and all this, murdering and killing and all that, they're accumulating all these negative karmas which they'll have to pay back, either in this life or in future lives. So they say, fear the karmas, but love God. Do not fear God. Love Him. So that's why they say, you know, some people say he's God-fearing. I say, better than God-fearing is God-loving. Love Him. But be watchful about your karma. So they say these are the five relationships we can have with God. and pick one of them, whichever one appeals to you best. Some people love him as a father or a mother, you know, because in Hinduism we also have the mother goddess, Mother Durga or Mother Lakshmi or Mother Saraswati or Mother Kali, like Ramakrishna Paramhans loved, you know, Mother Kali. So have a relationship of a father or a mother. Oh Lord, you are my creator. You have given me birth and I love you as a father or a mother. And you can have that, that's wonderful. Or you can have the relationship as a Lord, but Lord not as a Lord like a dictator, not like Saddam Hussein or Hitler or Mussolini, who is standing and watching, and the moment I do something bad, he's going to throw lightning and kill me or punish me. No, he's the loving Lord and Master, and I am his humble servant, and he has placed me on this earth to serve the world, and I am his humble servant and he loves me. That's why he has given me this opportunity to serve. So love him, but as a loving master, not as a master who is angry with me all the time. Then there is a relationship of a friend, where you say, God is my friend. And like Sudama or like Arjun, where they love God as a friend. Arjuna did not love him as the Lord or as the father or the mother. Even after he saw all this, he still, you know, his relationship remained as a friend. So love him as a friend. God is my friend. He has given me whatever I have. He takes care of me. I am not afraid. So he is with me at all times. He is my friend. And there are many people who love God as a child, especially for ladies. A relationship of a child, like baby Krishna. You know, some people have this little image of either Krishna or Ganesh or even baby Jesus. You know, some people have that. And especially in Hindu homes, you know, they will take that image and they will give it a bath and then they will change its clothes and then give him food and love him and sing songs and put him to sleep. So they treat God as a little child, and they have, so just as a mother loves her child, the love for God as a child is very powerful. It is very easy to, you know, for a mother, the love for child is so spontaneous and so complete because she identifies that this child is me. So when you love God as a child, especially for Ganesh or Krishna, it is, a lot of people love them as a child, or even Jesus. And then even higher than that is the form of the beloved. And there are certain faiths in India where they say that we are all atmas and he is Paramatma. So we are all female. Whether I am a man or a woman, I am Atma. I am the soul and he is Paramatma. He is the supreme soul. So we are all females. All of us. Men, women, all of us are females. And he is the one whom I have to love. So that relationship is a relationship of a wife with a husband, or a beloved with a beloved. Just as Mirabai. Mirabai, you know, loved Krishna as my husband. He said, I'm married to Krishna. She left her husband. She left her kingdom. She left everything. Why? Because Krishna is my husband. In Christianity, so many of the nurses, they say, I'm married to Jesus. You know, if you hear that, when they leave the home and they join the congregation, they say, I'm married to Jesus. He is my husband. So that relationship also is very intense, is very close, because when he is my beloved, I am married to him, then he and I are one. There is no separation, just as if there is true relationship between husband and wife, true love is when there is oneness, that he and I are not separate, but we are one, and together we are functioning. Then also these Hindi film songs, you know, they say, hum aur tum, what is it, ek dil do jaan, and all that, you know, do jisam ek jaan hai hum. In all these songs, they say, we are two bodies, but we are one mind and one life and all that. In all these songs are there, O Mere Sanam and all that. So the idea being that the oneness. So pick any of these relationships. And it doesn't matter that, you know, you call him a friend. You can even laugh and joke with him and tease him. You can scold him like a child, like Yashoda used to scold Krishna. And when he used to eat mud, she would even slap him. But it is done out of love. So it is not that one has to necessarily fear him. Yeah, if you love him as a father or a mother or Lord is fine, but you can love him as a friend. You don't have to be afraid of him because he's nothing to be afraid of. He's all loving. You can love him as a child. You can scold him. You know, what is this? You are giving me so many problems. You know, you are God and I thought you will help me. And what is this? I'm having so many. You can do that too. You can scold him. That doesn't matter. God says, no matter what way you talk to me, what way you remember me, I bless you. Even the great demons who hated God and they constantly thought of God as an enemy like Ravana or Hiranyakashipu. These were demons. These were horrible people. And God came on earth to destroy them, like Ram came, you know, to destroy Ravana. And Ravana knew that Ram is coming because he had kidnapped his wife. And he was sitting in Lanka and he knew Ram is coming, Ram is coming. And he's horrible, he's a monster, he's so bad, he's going to kill me. I have to prepare my army, I have to fight. And constantly he was thinking of Ram as an enemy, of God as an enemy. Oh my God, I have to kill him, I have to, when he comes, I'm going to do this, Even that is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. He says, even you remember me as an enemy, that's fine too. As long as you remember me. That's what they say, that like Tylenol. You know, when you take it, whether you know the ingredients or not, or you say, I hate the taste of this medicine, or you say, oh, it's a sweet tablet. Whether you hate it or you love that medicine, Tylenol, when it goes in your body, will remove the fever. Whether it's a bitter medicine or it's a sweet, syrup, Tylenol is Tylenol. However you take it, it will remove the fever. So similarly, God's name is like Tylenol. However you take it, it doesn't matter. Whatever way, it will remove the fever of your sorrows. It will remove the fever of your ignorance. So he says, remember me, even remember me as an enemy. It's okay. I still bless you. Of course, if you remember me as a friend or as a loving beloved, that's even better. Obviously, if you say God is my enemy, I hate him, that's fine. But if you say God is my friend, I love him, how much better is the relationship? So that's what he says. Just as a father forgives, as a beloved forgives, as a friend, you are my beloved, you are my Lord. So please forgive me. And that is the love that we see in this beautiful relationship. And in these verses, you see how the relationship is. And that is what one has to take from this particular verse, that love him and think, okay, which one of the five I can relate to, and pick one. And then just stay in that. That's good. It's fine. Any of them. So God loving is better than God fearing. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.